Welcome to Film Broad C, a podcast for women who want to learn how to write and produce a film they love. If you're a newbie writer or filmmaker, or an actress who's tired of auditions for one-dimensional roles, if you're overseeing yet another badly written script from a mediocre white man and you want to do something about it, you're in the right place. Get inspired by the pioneering women of the golden age of Hollywood through to today's changemakers and disruptors with practical how-tos to finally write and produce your damn script already. I'm your host, Emily Grace. Welcome to the show. Hi, and welcome to episode 11. Shadow Work is in the can. I'm so thrilled that this film went so exceptionally well on set. Not to say we didn't have obstacles, because let me tell you something, we did. And we had this incredible all-female and femme-identifying crew who were just totally committed to making it work, to finding solutions and getting shit done. Our septic system broke day one. We had rain and then we had snow for what was supposed to be an all exterior shoot. There were times where we were really scrambling and not sure we were going to be able to pull this off. But at the end of the day, we pulled together as an amazing crew. I would hire every single person again for future jobs. And we got the film we set out to get. And we finished production about an hour and a half to 2 hours earlier than we needed to. So as the assistant director, I felt very good about that. And I will be doing a bonus season probably sometime this summer called From the Trenches, because being on an active production, I'm learning so many lessons and I really want to bring these things to you while it's fresh, especially if you're moving towards self-production. There's just so much that I want to share with you about what went well, which was pretty much everything, but there were some things to think about and learn from. So that is a bonus season I will be putting together sometime this summer, so keep your eye out for that. And here's the latest pigeon watch. So on Shadow Work, the director is actually friends with someone who wrote a short film called Pigeon about a pigeon, and it's also about grief, because I was, you know, talking to her about my script Pigeon and what inspired it. And as she's telling me this, the blood is just like draining out of my face and my heart's dropping into my stomach like, oh, fuck, are you kidding? And then I realized what a great gift this is, because I know ahead of time there's another short film called Pigeon that's in post-production. This is an opportunity for me to change my title. So there will be a revised title for the film. I don't think it's going to be a big shift, maybe The Pigeon or That Pigeon or A Pigeon, something in that realm. From what I know about this film, yes, there are similarities in terms of pigeons and grief, but the trajectory of the story is very, very, very different. And I've always been a firm believer that there's plenty of success to go around. What's good for the pigeon is good for the goose. That's not really the saying, but I think there's enough room in this world for two short films about pigeons. And if you don't already know this, titles can't be copyrighted. Inside my self-production program, we talk a lot about how to protect your work and own your IP and copyright and register your script and having good contracts in place. And all of those things are really important. And you actually can't copyright a title. Now, I could jump down a whole rabbit hole about legal contracts, but I'm going to reel myself in. I'm going to save that for From the Trenches, because it is really important to treat your film like the business and legal entity that it is. But today, I want to stay focused on where we're at in this podcast, and we are still in the screenwriting process. So let's talk about one of the most important elements of that process, and that is getting feedback. Feedback is essential to get the best, most powerful, most cohesive script possible. Every screenwriter, no matter how experienced they are, benefits from feedback. TV writer rooms are set up to be a collaborative process. More minds, more eyes on the story makes the story better. Each writer in a TV writer's room will have their specific episode that they will write, and they work on an outline, a beat sheet. They map out the season as a group, sharing insights and feedback every step of the way. That's one of the reasons why television has become so incredibly amazing in terms of storytelling and scripting because multiple minds on the story are always going to make it better. And let me tell you something. Some of the biggest films from the last year, in my opinion, they really could have used like at least two more revisions after some pointed specific feedback. Now, I wish we already had our community aspect of this podcast where we could go to a private place and talk about these things freely, naming names, but we're not there yet. So when we have that, I will tell you exactly what films I'm talking about that really could have benefited from some strong feedback and some revisions. But for the moment, I'll just let you know I'm having these thoughts and keeping them to myself. I know firsthand how hard it is to write anything, to get anything made, and then to make it good is even harder. But it starts with what's on the page. And some of those films really could have used some feedback through the lens of the tools that I talk about on this podcast. But hey, those projects got made and they were wildly successful and a lot of people really loved them. So what do I know? Probably not as much as those people did. Now, this is one of the reasons why I get feedback on all of my scripts because I know I have blind spots, right? I can see the blind spots you have. You can see the blind spots I have. I know things might make sense to me in my head and then become confusing when they're on the page. Feedback has always made my scripts better. And there are three things to keep in mind when you're getting feedback: who it's from, when to get it, and how to receive it. And that's exactly what this episode is about. But first, let's talk about an incredible, unconventional screenwriter from old Hollywood who also understood the power of feedback, Anita Loos. This show is sponsored by Write Your Short. If you want to write and produce a script that you love, but you don't know how to get started, go to writeyourshort.com. Don't create in a vacuum or try to figure this out all by yourself. Learn how to write a festival-worthy script you can produce or star in or direct or wear all those hats at once. With writeyourshort.com, you can get the exact next steps you need to take based on where you're at in the process. No guesswork, self-doubt, or overwhelm. Just a proven process to make the most powerful film possible. That's writeyourshort.com. And now, back to the show. Anita Loos was born in California in 1888, a fact that she tried to protect at all costs. Much like her contemporary Mary Pickford, she lied shamelessly about her actual age. She claimed to be in her teens when she started writing movies, but it was more like her mid-20s. And on IMDb, she's credited with over 141 films. I'm pretty sure if she took my screenwriting superpower quiz, she would be a disruptor. I'm a disruptor too. That's my results. And if you haven't taken it yet, why not? Take it. I want to know what your results are. You can take that quiz at writeyourshort.com and then DM me on Instagram and let me know what results you got. Anita Loos excelled at satire and witty dialogue, which initially made things a little bit difficult for her during the silent film era, since films didn't contain any dialogue. But she found a way to change the game with intertitles. Intertitles were these title cards within a film that would provide context, move the story forward, set the tone, it might offer some narration, and thanks to Anita, they also provided a lot of comedic relief. Intertitles became their own type of art form that combined relevant information with as few words as possible. She would have been amazing at Instagram Reels and TikToks if she were around in our era. But at that time, intertitles had to be hand-painted, so brevity was really essential. And I would wager a guess that she became so good at this art form because she listened to feedback from her collaborators and she could track audience reactions as another form of feedback to get even better at her craft. When the talkies became the new frontier, it was a match made in heaven for Anita's skill set as a screenwriter. One of her favorite topics to write about was clueless men. And from the research on her life, it looks like this topic probably comes directly from her personal experience, something that inspires so many scripts of my clients and myself included. She was championed and encouraged as a screenwriter by D.W. Griffith. He hired her as the first female staff writer at his company, Triangle Film Corporation, and Griffith later partnered with Mary Pickford on United Artists, if you recall from episode one of this podcast. Anita was also lifelong friends with Frances Marion, who I talked about in the last episode, and Mary Pickford appeared in Anita's first produced script, The New York Hat. Anita wrote the scenario, Frances Marion developed it for the screen, and D.W. Griffith directed it. Kind of like what's happening with Shadow Work, because in my ideal world, I'm going to be able to bring a lot of the crew from Shadow Work onto Pigeon. The film, The New York Hat, was about three of Anita's favorite topics, sex, fashion, and gossip. Now, while at Triangle, Anita collaborated with several other writers. One of them was John Emerson, who eventually became her husband, which is kind of too bad from what I could tell from the research. He didn't sound like a great supportive partner. He insisted that they work together, which she described their working relationship as her working while he laid in bed, and he also demanded a lot of credit for the work she did and spent a good deal of her money without her knowing, which meant a never-ending hustle for Anita in her later years. And he convinced her that he needed a break from the marriage once a week, so on Tuesdays he would go out with much younger women. Which it doesn't seem like she was particularly down for that, but she went along with it anyway. Of her husband, she's quoted as saying, "I had set my sights on a man of brains to whom I could look up, but what a terrible letdown it would be to find out that I was smarter than he was." The curious case of the mediocre white man continues. Now, regardless of the caliber or lack thereof of her husband, she was a very unconventional woman. She leased a house with John Emerson before they were married, something considered scandalous at the time. She boldly wrote about smart women exploiting the stupidity of men, and despite her tiny stature of 4'11", she was a powerful presence who commanded respect in a male-dominated industry. She was so good at screenwriting that at MGM, Irving Thalberg assigned her to be a script doctor, revising the work of other screenwriters to make it better. Kind of like another form of feedback. Later on, she wrote a series of short stories for Harper's Weekly, which she then published as the 1925 novel Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, something you've probably heard of. This project has seen so many versions and revivals in the century since it came out. Now, apparently, her husband tried to stop her from publishing it, and when that didn't work, he tried to add a dedication to himself in her book, claiming that he taught her everything she knew about writing. Like, ugh, Anita, what are you doing with this guy? Now, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes is based on more personal experience for Anita. There was a time she thought she was having this deep, thrilling, engrossing conversation with a man she deeply admired. He was cultural critic and essayist H.L. Mencken. When during this conversation that she was so into, he kept getting distracted by a gorgeous blonde who contributed very little to the conversation. This was the idea that sparked Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. Now, after the novel, it became a hit play, then a film starring Ruth Taylor. Years later, it became a musical starring Carol Channing, followed by the 1953 version of the film starring Marilyn Monroe and Jane Russell. This is probably the version of this project that you're most familiar with, and if you are familiar with that film, you'll recognize the enduring influence of Marilyn Monroe's character singing "Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend" in her pink evening gown, surrounded by all these suited men, which inspired Ryan Gosling's Oscar performance of "I'm Just Ken," and it was also the prototype for Madonna's music video "Material Girl." The legacy of Anita Loos lives on. Now, despite her ability to point out the cluelessness of men and her penchant for protecting the female stars that she wrote for by advocating for characters that would actually represent them well and not just tell the stories that the male executives wanted her to write. She wasn't particularly feminist in her outlook or her actions. She's actually on record in her later life saying things like, if women's lib supporters had more sex, they would smile more. Which is not great, is it? And many of her jokes, which she was so well known for, would be incredibly offensive by today's standards. And apparently, she had a strong streak of racism as well. Mary Pickford's husband, Douglas Fairbanks, who was a longtime collaborator of Anita Loos and who was fairly progressive for his time, used to go revise her intertitled drafts and edit out the ethnic slurs that he found there. Once again, it's not great, and also brings us back to why feedback from someone you trust is so essential. Anita's Hollywood career spanned 3 decades. After her on-screen adaptation of the play The Women, starring Joan Crawford and Norma Shearer, with one-liners like, "There's a name for you ladies, but it isn't used in high society, outside of a kennel." Do you get it? She's calling them bitches, in case you didn't pick up on that. After that adaptation, she returned to New York, and she was a writer until the very end for musicals, magazines, and a pair of memoirs, and she died at the ripe old age of 93. Yes, that was her actual age. The theme of this episode is feedback. It's essential to your process as a screenwriter, so let's talk about how to get it and make the most of it, starting with who to get feedback from. You want to get feedback from someone you trust, and most importantly, someone who knows more about screenwriting than you do. The operative word here is screenwriting. There's not a ton of value in feedback from someone who can't articulate solutions to help you improve your work. And things like, I liked it, or I didn't like it, or I don't get it, is not particularly actionable or helpful in terms of feedback. Like, straight up, I'm great at giving feedback. I'm great at seeing what structural or character development pieces are missing and how you can get to a cohesive script that actually articulates your vision and makes you look good as a writer. It's kind of my superpower if you've listened to episode 3 or 6. So this leads me to the next aspect of feedback you can actually use. When should you get feedback? In my opinion, from the beginning, start getting feedback as you develop your characters, your central question, and especially your outline, which we're going to talk about in the next episode. Get feedback along the way to test your idea. Get as clear and specific as possible before you ever start scripting. Now, I get it. It might feel like all this prep work is making the process take longer because here we are 11 episodes in and we still haven't gotten to scripting, but that is intentional. That is by design. The truth is all this prep work now is going to save you tons of time when you do get to scripting. Let me share a few stories from my clients to show you what I mean. One of my students from the Short Film Lab wrote a film that has to do with Alzheimer's. Now, some of her feedback was to make sure her dialogue was authentic and the struggle of this one specific character was realistic to the process of declining because of Alzheimer's. That kind of feedback is going to be essential for this film to be believable and to resonate authentically with people who can recognize being in that kind of situation. Then there was Katie's script for Shadow Work. She also developed this script inside the Short Film Lab program. And this is the film that we just produced this weekend, which was so magical and amazing. I can't wait to share it with you. Now, I met Katie at the idea phase of this project. She knew what she wanted to write about, and she had an idea of the world she wanted to play in, but she didn't know anything about screenwriting. So she came into the program and she followed the steps in order, which, by the way, the order of the steps are exactly what this podcast is based on. So you have those steps too. And when she paired those steps with consistent feedback, Katie was able to write Shadow Work in 8 weeks. She was able to write, revise, and get to a final draft. And then from there, we had a table read so she could get some outside feedback and fresh eyes on it. And Katie made her final polish from there. Like, from idea to final draft in 8 weeks, baby, it's doable when you have a process. Now let's compare that to one of my private clients who is writing a TV pilot. Now this is different, right? There's more pages in a TV pilot, so the actual scripting time is going to take longer because of that. And this private client did sort of the opposite of Katie. She wrote the entire TV pilot on her own, pretty much in a vacuum. She had never written a TV pilot before. She does have a TV executive friend who gave her like a little bit of advice here and there, but it wasn't super specific in terms of actionable steps on how to revise her script. So this client has spent upwards of a year writing this half-hour pilot. And after a year, she came to me for feedback with a full draft already written. Now, there's a ton of great moments in this pilot, and part of my superpower is I can see where she's trying to go. I love what she's trying to create, but I can also see the script isn't there yet. The vision in her mind and what is on the page are not matching up yet. The script isn't cohesive. There's like a bunch of puzzle pieces, but they don't quite fit together. And remember, this is a TV pilot, so there's a lot more heavy lifting, character intros, story setup that needs to happen in a pilot, which is really not the case in a short film. Writing a TV pilot is a tall order, and it's one of the reasons why I'm so passionate that you start with a short film. It gives you the tools and the confidence and the experience to then expand your repertoire with a better understanding of screenwriting. But if you're not going to take my advice, and don't worry, you will not be the first or the last person who said, nah, I'm going to jump right into a TV pilot, even though I've never written a script before, then I implore you to get feedback from the beginning. Don't wait until you've written the whole draft to get feedback. My private client now basically has to unravel all of the work she's already done, and we've got to reconstruct this script with the right tools in place from the beginning. And she's doing it, and I have full confidence in her that this script is going to become everything that she envisions. I love the script. I love the potential. It's amazing. And I know that we're going to get there, but doing it this way is so much more work when you write the script first and then get feedback after the fact. I designed my program to go step by step to help you develop your script in stages with feedback every step of the way so you don't ever get into this place of overwhelm and just wanting to give up. Don't give up. Just get the right kind of help from someone who knows what they're doing, and more specifically, from someone who knows more about screenwriting than you do. That's the key. And finally, let's talk about how to receive feedback. We've talked about who, we've talked about when, now let's talk about how. This is how we conduct feedback sessions inside my programs. That's the Short Film Lab, the Make Shit Happen Club, and with my private clients. Your job as the writer in your feedback session is to listen. Listen to the feedback, take it in, really try to hear it, and then take the notes that resonate with you and leave the rest. Your job as the writer is not to explain your choices, to defend your choices, to tell the note giver you don't like or agree with their feedback. Some of my Make Shit Happen members love to verbally process and give very lengthy explanations for the choices that they make in their script when they're getting feedback. And I get it. If you are a verbal processor, that is how you process. I understand that. And if you have to launch into a 5-minute explanation for every note of feedback that you get, it means what you intended isn't clear in your script. Now, it's up to you to take that note or not. But as far as feedback goes, your job is to listen, absorb, and say thank you, and then decide how you want to proceed. Now let's clarify the situation, because not all feedback situations are created equal. So if you're in my program, for example, writing a script that you own, what I've just described is how I suggest you take feedback. And if you're asking for feedback from a trusted colleague or a writer friend, it's the same, right? Listen to the feedback, say thank you, don't defend anything, don't explain, and then decide whether you want to take the notes or not. That's it.
simple. On the other hand, if you sold a script and you're attached as the screenwriter, if you're in a TV writer's room, you're going to have to find a way to incorporate the notes that you get, even if you don't like them or you don't agree with them. Now, sometimes you can advocate for something if you feel really strongly about it, but you have to pick and choose those battles wisely. If you're getting paid to do rewrites, if you're employed by a showrunner, the script doesn't belong to you anymore. It now becomes your job to deliver the vision of the showrunner or the producer or whoever put up the money for the script. So how you handle feedback will change depending on the situation. For our purposes, when it's your script and your vision, you get to take the notes you want and leave the rest. And that brings me to the final point I want to make about feedback. It's a tool to help make your script better, to clarify your idea, and make sure what you want to communicate is coming through on the page. It's not a place to expect total validation. Be very intentional with why you want feedback. Be specific about what you're asking feedback for. And don't set yourself up to expect that your script is finished when your feedback only comes back as amazing, no notes. That will rarely, if ever, happen. Everyone's going to have an opinion. Everyone's going to have a note. Everyone's going to have a different idea of what you should be doing with your script. Your job is to get the best script that supports your vision, and knowing when you've reached that point is part of developing your confidence as a writer. Clients often ask me, how do I know when my script is done? And to that, I will say, when it's good enough that you feel confident sharing it with people, when your act structure and your character development are solid, when every setup has a payoff and vice versa, and all the pieces thread together to make a cohesive whole. Once you get to that point, your script is really strong and any further revisions will become more cosmetic, right? They may come from the input when you hire a director. They may come from the table read you do with the actors and there's a few line changes here and there. Some revisions may come in the moment on set when you are producing the project. It reminds me of what Lorne Michaels says about Saturday Night Live. Like, we don't go live because we're ready. We go live because it's 11:30. So at some point, you've got to move this project towards production, and minor changes are always going to come, even in the edit. So don't put the pressure of, I have to get my script perfect before I can move on you. Just feel good enough to share it with people. And one of the best ways you can get to that point is by getting feedback from someone that you trust, who knows more about screenwriting than you do. You have totally got this. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next time. If you enjoyed the show, remember to subscribe, and even better, leave a 5-star review. Ready to finally write and produce your damn script already? Go to writeyourshort.com to get started and connect with me on Instagram at @TheOnlyEmilyGrace. Your story matters, and who better to tell it than you? Stay tuned for the next episode, and I'll see you there.